All right, guys, so here we are. We're at Future Magic. We've come back to visit them, say g'day, drink some more beers. And thankfully, Sean and Reese let us come back in here and do some more filming. But today, I'm with the one and only Hendo. You might know him from Brew Cult, you might know him from Rockstar, you might know him from TAFE, you might just know him from some geeky YouTube videos, and we'll get to all of those in a little bit later. Welcome, mate.
Good to see you, man.
You too, mate.
What's happening?
What's the Hendo story?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, basically, I'm a home brewer that decided to go pro and, you know, former IT engineer, and then just decided that I'd become a professional brewer sort of in the late noughties. And so I've been doing this as a profession, brewing for about 15 odd years now. And
excellent.
It's a lot of fun and I love it. It's been a very eclectic journey, but I love what I do and I'm not going to bloody stop anytime soon. So yeah.
Your first foray into professional brewing, it wasn't Brew Cult.
No.
What was it?
Oh, well, I had one job that only lasted 9 days, but I won't mention that. But my first job was with Luke Scott at Prickly Moses Otway Estate.
Yep.
Sort of an hour west of Geelong in a little town of Colac in country Victoria.
Yep.
It was basically a brewery that was on a winery, and you know, got that job as, you know, my first assistant brewer gig.
Yep.
And learnt heaps like straight away and that sort of thing. And within like,
have you done any training apart from your home brewing?
Yeah, well, I've got the graduate certificate in brewing from Federation University.
Okay.
So I'd recently finished that. Didn't fill out the paperwork to get the bloody ticket for another 5 years, but you know, it is what it is. And I'd re-educated, retrained myself from IT to become a brewer, and in and of that self, that process took about 5 years or so to get that qualification.
Yep.
Yeah, so I basically became professional brewers, working for Luke, making some good beers, and he Luke's very sort of regimented brewer, just likes making the same beers all the time. Some brewers are like that, and that's totally cool. And I'm like all creative. I'm like, because I've been home brewing, I just want to make all these different beers. And so my first commercially released beer was a beer called Black Panther IBA, not IPA. It was India Black Ale, because we didn't call them black IPAs back then.
Yep.
And that
was... Were
they
Cascadian Dark Ales, or that hadn't filtered out?
No, not even. It was called an IBA.
Yeah, right.
And the kegs were tapped at Chloe's Bar.
Yep.
At Young and Jackson, right on Flinders Street in Melbourne.
Words I don't know, but yep, I'll
and,
take your word for it.
Well, it's a very famous old pub right across the road from Flinders Street Station in Melbourne. And there's Chloe in there, right?
Yep.
My girlfriend.
Yep.
And she's, you know, she's a painting in there, and she's butt naked all the time.
Yeah, okay.
I released this beer and it was very well received, and all of a sudden it kind of took off from there. So I just sort of kept honing my skills, you know, making new and interesting beers there. I think some of the highlight beers that I made there would have been the Raconteur IPA, which I think is still available. I think they still brew it. Mm. It's probably obviously evolved quite a bit. Brewing an IPA in 2009, 2010 was very different to brewing an IPA in 2023. So brewing an IPA...
The bitter wars.
Well, exactly, that's what happened. Yeah. And so we were selling kegs, and we went into Beer Deluxe, you know, just over at Federation Square there. And we saw Siobhan Kerrin, who works for the IBA now, and we got to sell these kegs of IPA, and she goes, how many IBUs does it have? And I went, 72, and she's like, ooh. And if you try and sell an IPA with 72 IBUs in 2023, people would tell you to fuck right off, you know? So anyway, that was what it was like.
And yeah.
The beer was pretty well received, and so we did lots of different beers, and it just became sort of a bit of a passion project, you know, that I could sort of, that they were really good in letting me sort of be creative, as well as learning the ropes in making beer and all that sort of thing. And it was a lot of fun. And but eventually I sort of like I like my learning curve very steep, and I wanted more. And so, and I'd also was living in Colac, and I'd moved to Geelong. And the issue there was that it was an hour and a quarter travel each day. So if we're starting at 6 o'clock in the morning, I was up at 4:30 to get in the car, drive an hour and a quarter to go. And so this job came up at Southern Bay Brewing Company in Geelong, on Point Henry, where the old Alcoa aluminium smelter was. Southern Bay is a very old brewery. It's been around, since 1988.
Sale recently.
Yeah, because they went bust. Yep. And very old brewery, you know. For example, the bottling machine was at the time was 70 years old, so it would have been 85, 90-year-old, old Meyer, you know, 40-head bottling machine and tunnel pasteurizer. And
that'd be loud.
There were no cylindrical fermenters there.
Yeah, right.
And so we would ferment in these old square tanks. So if you can imagine a shipping container that's been sort of cut lengthways down the middle, that was the shape of the tanks.
Yeah, right.
And no CIP, clean in place, we actually had to climb inside the vessels and scrub them.
Literally clean them in place.
No, it's not clean in place.
You're the cleaner.
You had to get in the whole Beastie Boys suit, that sort of thing. And the brew house was phenomenal. It was like the kettle, or the mash tun kettle, and the whirlpool were these 160-litre big vessels, but we only filled them up to maybe 70 hectolitres. Yep. But they were made of mild steel. And so you look at the inside of it, it wasn't shiny stainless, it was rust.
Yeah.
Right? And I'd think that all the beers would turn up being all metallic, but they weren't.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't understand to this day. And the Lauderton was from the old distillery that used to be in town. That was 70 years old.
Yeah, right.
And so that was stainless steel, but the false bottom was brass.
Yep.
You know? And the square tanks were from, I believe, the old Volham Brewery, which was in sort of the CBD of Geelong. They were actually, funnily enough, they were pressure vessels.
Yeah, right.
So what would happen is CUB bought the Volham Brewery, and then what they would do is they would use the Volham Brewery to rack kegs. So they would tanker truck Carlton Draft, whatever, or VB, down from the Abbotsford Brewery to Geelong, pump the beer into these tanks, and they were pressure vessels, but only if they were bricked in, and we didn't have them bricked in, right? And so they would carbonate the beer in these old square tanks and then rack off into kegs for local distribution. I really liked the history of the place. It was old, it was hard work, but we started making some really good beers there, and sort of like I carried over that sort of creative aspect, and we started doing lots of beers. Like I think probably one of my favorite labels that I've created would be Hop Bazooka IPA.
Yep.
And it was a beer that I wanted to be as good as Hop Hog, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because I'd moved to Melbourne, I'd been to the Australian International Beer Awards gala dinner at the Crown Palladium or whatever. Yep. I think this would have been 2008. And there was 700 industry people in the room, and I knew two people in the room. And I was sitting at the right at the nosebleed seats, right at the back of the room. And Hop Hog won the champion pale ale and champion beer. And I'm just thinking, I want to make a beer that good, you know? And that sort of became a bit of a personal commitment, you know? And so invented Hop Bazooka IPA, and we were afforded a really unique opportunity because we had these square tanks, and in the cold conditioning room was basically a big massive cold room full of more of these square tanks.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is there'd be crossbars in the tank, and we would fucking sprinkle, we were doing an unheard of at the time, 10 grams per litre of dry hop, right? So we'd sprinkle hops across the floor, and then we actually got some cones. I think we got Galaxy cones and that sort of thing. And we hung them in sacks on the crossbars and stuff like that. And this beer was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was just absolutely unheard of with the hop aromatics at the time. And something clicked in my head, and I went, fuck, we're onto something here. And so we entered that in 2012, we entered that into the Perth Royal Beer Show, and beat Hop Hog and got a gold medal.
Yeah, nice.
You know, I went, okay, well, that's objective achieved. What do I do next? And so, stupidly, I decided to then go and start a brewing company.
Which was Brew Cult, which is, and still does have a bit of a cult following.
It does, yes.
It lives on.
You asked for a t-shirt the
100%. Other day. 100%, yeah, I'll make my own if I have to. Yeah, because one of my very first early beers that I checked in on Untappd way back in 2014 was one of yours. And then going through
which
mine. The Funk.
Can't fight the funk.
But I checked in, I think, about 6 or 7 of your beers in that one year.
Yeah.
A lot of them were from your Funk series, the Psychedelic series.
There was heaps. Brewcult was a lot of fun because, I don't know why I decided to start Brewcult. I just guess I thought if I made good beer, then people would buy it.
Yep.
It was very, you know, looking back on it fondly now, it was 10 years ago now, it was 2013 when I started it. I just thought if I made interesting beers that people would buy them.
To be fair, they did.
They did, yes, exactly. But what I wasn't prepared for was the challenge of running a brewing company and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I started brewing all these interesting beers. The first two beers with Brewcult that I released was Acid Freaks, which was the Balsamic Baltic Porter, which I made in collaboration with my brother, who's a vinegar maker.
Should just call it the Hendos.
If you have a look at the label, right? And put a picture of the OG label, it's actually two. Is it one or is it two? Oh my God, it's been so long. just Google acid, doing a Google image search of Acid Freaks. I had, Megan McPhail, artist I knew from Bendigo, painted it and then we digitized it and turned it into a label. And that was my first Gabs beer in 2013. People just went, you can do that with beer? And I'm like, shit, yeah, I can do anything with beer. And so it just got really, really creative. And so we did lots of beers. The Psychedelic series was a lot of fun. So basically they had all these old 60s labels. So there was, what was it? Can't Fight the Funk, which was a farmhouse IPA. So it was basically an IPA brewed with Saison yeast. Out of Sight, which was a white IPA, which was American wheat IPA. It wasn't Belgian yeast or anything like that. Keep On Truckin', which was the red IPA, which had a lot of kiwi hops, good red colour. Buggin' Out Black IPA, and Get Down American Brown.
Which was great, but
the thing is, do you know the commonality between those beers? Did I tell you?
Yeah, you did.
They all have the same starting gravity.
Yeah.
And even though they have different alcohol because the yeast attenuate out a bit differently and that sort of thing, they all had the same starting gravity. They all had the same IBUs as well. And so there was that sort of commonality between them. And all had three hops as well.
Yeah.
Three malts and three hops. And so, it was good fun. And
you could really play around with the Superdelica.
It was good. And the labels, they look great. They look good as a set. But then I went and did all sorts of different things, you know. Full Metal Anorak, which was like an English IPA, and that was a lot of fun. And then I did a good friend of mine, Matt Hoffman, who had started this sort of alter ego on social media as an alternative model. But really he was just a big burly bearded guy and he made himself out to be like an alternative model, like a Suicide Girls or something like that. And I went, let's do a beer. So I stuck his face on a label and that was an India Pale Lager that I brewed called Beer Geek Rage Quit.
Yep.
And that was fun because there was four different colours of the label. It was the same beer. I had a really good, Robbie Watkins I spoke to today actually. And he was with a label company in Melbourne. I said, I want to get a roll of labels, but I want every label to be a different colour.
Yeah.
And so we had these different variants. And then what we did is that we had the Willy Wonka gold label, which we would randomly stick in. We stuck maybe five gold label Beer Geek Rage Quits in. And then as I released it, I put on social media, there's these labels if you find them. You'll get a t-shirt or something like that. And then people were posting it back. It was a really good way to get this engagement and that sort of thing. And it was a lot of fun. So lots of creative beers.
Yeah.
Lots of creative beers. But as you sort of grow, you know, the distribution grew. We pretty much had distribution in every state in the country.
Yep.
Except for the Northern Territory. Yeah. So it was everywhere.
Yeah, well, I got them up here.
Well, had a really good distributor up here. So I had Dan Rickard from Caliber Craft Brewing Company, who was our local distributor here, and my good friend Adam Shell.
Not me, the other one.
Who was the sales rep for it. And I really loved it because, you know, that my biggest market outside of Victoria, my home state, was my own home state of Queensland. And so it was always good fun to come up here and drink stupid amounts of beer. And it was good.
Yeah. And that was, that was a while ago. How long did Brewcot survive before you had to wind it up?
Wound up in early 2017. So what happened was we were Gypsy Brewing. So Brewcot never had a brewery at all.
You won an award. You won a trophy at the Avis.
We did. This is the thing. So you know, Brewcot as a business was absolutely on the up and up. So we were doing all these amazing beers, was generating a lot of hype. In 2015, the Gabs Festival beer that I brewed was a beer called Milk and Two Sugars, which was an Imperial Milk Stout. And it's basically, for all intents and purposes, what they call a pastry stout now. Yeah. It was that back in 2015.
With lactose.
Had not a lactose in it. And so Milk and Two Sugars did extremely well at Gabs. I think there was maybe 90 festival beers that year, you know, and amongst some amazing other beers like you know, Golden Stout Time was that year. It debuted at the same Gabs and they came second and that sort of thing. Sorry, Jace. And there was just so many amazing beers, but people just voted in droves for Milk and Two Sugars. It was a beer that tasted like espresso martini.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. Like, this beer was so hard to construct as well, because we put 3,000 shots of espresso and 120 litres of cold drip into a batch of this beer. So to actually make the 3,000 shots, I had teamed up with Axel Coffee Roasters in Melbourne, and they have a coffee roaster, and they have a couple of cafes, and they have a training academy for baristas. And so basically what they do is they'd get the trainee baristas, lock them in the room with all of the training coffee machines, and go, right, you're doing espresso shots for the next 4 days. And that's really what happened, right? 3,000 shots. And then they would put it into a tub, bring it out the brewery, into the tank, and away. Exactly. But they learned. It was good. And so, that won Pete Gabb's People's Choice. That was a massive moment. It was right around the time that Brewcot rebranded. It was huge. And so the next thing we did from there is we shifted all the production down to Kaiju, the new brewery in Dandenong South. So it was brewing at Cavalier in Derrimut on Western Melbourne. Moved down to Dandenong, moved all the production down there. At this time, and it's probably one of the really special moments, I'm going to send you this photo, Joel, of myself, Grum from Exit Brewing, and Nat from Kaiju. It was shortly after they had commissioned it. So Exit and Kaiju had built this brewery together, and then I was Gypsy Brewing as well, and we all clubbed in, and we all won trophies at the ARBAs that year.
Yeah.
And, or at least gold medals and that sort of thing. And it was just a really special time. We sort of just built this
all
brewery.
All brewing
amazing stuff, and just kicking ass in awards, and it was pretty cool. Pretty cool. And so in that AIBAs in 2016, I'd entered a beer called Thanks Captain Obvious IPA, which was one of the core range IPAs. It won a gold medal, was in contention for champion pale ale, because it was an American style strong pale ale. It didn't get that trophy, but because I was a Gypsy Brewer and I'd won a gold medal, they have this thing called the champion Gypsy Brewer trophy.
Yep.
And it was the first time that they'd offered it or presented it. It was for contract brewers and Gypsy brewers and that sort of thing. And I won it. I won an AIBA trophy. And I'm like, holy fuck. Can't believe me. So it was just phenomenal and just huge. I remember just being so hungover, waking up in my bed the next morning, and I roll over and I dunk my head on the bloody trophy, because it's a big thing
on the bed with the trophy
metal, and it's just And I'm like, shit, man, you did it, you know? And you did it with an IPA.
Yeah.
And it was just a massive achievement. You know, from there, we go, well, what would we do next with the business? So I had a business partner. He wanted to get out of the business, had another business partner come in. We then decided we'd build a bar. But unfortunately, the bar flopped badly.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to run a bar.
Yeah.
I just make beer.
Yeah.
And so that ultimately brought the business down. And so Brewcult ended sort of early 2017, I think.
Yep.
And that was a pretty stressful time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there are some really good people in this industry, and particularly the good people at Stone and Wood Brewing, because
yep.
when you win a trophy, the champion brewer, one of the champion brewer trophies, you get invited back the following year to brew a collaboration beer with the champion small, medium and large brewery.
Yeah, okay.
To brew the beer for the ARBA gala dinner.
Yeah, okay.
And so the following year we all went to Byron Bay. So basically this was a Two Birds, Pirate Life, Stone and Wood, Brewcult collab.
Oh, wow.
Sick collab.
Yeah, I reckon.
So good.
Yeah.
And we brewed this East Coast IPA, and it was pretty bloody delicious, but it was only like on offer one night.
Mm.
And what happened was that Brewcult was in the process. It was a very slow train wreck, you know, when businesses
yep.
fail. And I'm talking to Keelan, the head brewer from Stone and Wood, and I'm standing on the brew deck on this day, enjoying the day, but stressing because my business was imminently
yeah.
about to fail, and I knew it. And I said to Keelan, I said, mate, Brewcult's not going to be around much longer, eh? And he goes, really? And I said, yeah, it's done. And I really could use a job. And he goes, no worries, mate. I'll put you in touch with Link. And, no, I was living in, I'd left Melbourne by that time,
right,
because the
here.
Business was sort of in that bad a state that I couldn't afford to pay rent.
Yep.
So I was living with my sister.
Yep.
You know, so that's how bad things were at the time. Is it time for an interview break?
Yeah, we'll have a quick break.
Well, man, you filled us up with time, but what we're going to do is we're going to come back and you're going to tell us more about your rockstar brewer.
You never tell me to shut up?
No, man, no. I can sit here all day drinking Sean's beers. Why not? Let's get into that.
All right.
So, yeah, awesome.